Louise McSharry on 2FM.
In How to Be an Adult this week, there is no doubt that there's a real appetite for tweakments and treatments post-pandemic. And I think there is also a little bit of confusion about what is IPL? What is microneedling? What can you do at home? What do you need to see a professional for? What should you be getting? What do things work for? And we thought, well, there's only one person really that you can talk to about this, that you can trust, that you know is going to tell you the truth. And that is the Skin Nerd, a.k.a. Jennifer Rock. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi, Louise, how are you?
I love it. Yeah, I love it too. Oh, your microphone wasn't on. That's why I couldn't hear you. It's okay. We're here now. I'm not used to having people in the studio. I've clearly forgotten how it works. So yeah, it's so good to see you. Nice to see you in real life.
You too. You're looking amazing.
Oh, thank you very much. So are you getting that vibe that people are like ready to kind of overhaul themselves?
I think also with a year of looking at yourself on Zoom and just even if you're WhatsApping friends and family, you're looking at yourself so much more. So there's definitely an interest in skincare more than ever. 55% of women are wearing a lot less makeup as well. So I think we tend to hide a little bit less now, which is brilliant. You use makeup to play with, which you're phenomenal at doing. But I suppose then that encourages you to look at your skin texture, your tone. You know, you might not be as aware of how cross you might have looked for a longer period of time during the day than you're aware of. So there's a new sector within skincare, which is what some call the medi-cosmetic. In, I suppose, technical language, we call it the non-medical versus the medical. So non-medical would be the words that you just said. So IPL stands for intense pulse light. Laser is actually an acronym. It stands for light amplification stimulation of emission of radiation. There's a tongue twister. Then there's microneedling, as you said, radio frequency. So they're what beauty therapists can do sometimes alongside a doctor or a nurse, and sometimes not needed. And then the medical world of skincare is things such as neurotoxins, which we might more commonly call Botox or fillers, and so on and so forth. So they can complement and work together, but it's an emerging field. It's been emerging for 2-3 decades now.
Yeah.
But in the last year, it's been spoken about so much more because, as I said, the increase in the popularity is just tenfold.
Huge. Yeah, I think that's so interesting what you're saying. It's kind of like, you know, we always look at French women who don't wear a huge amount of makeup but take incredible care of their skin. And it does seem like we're moving more in that direction that, you know, in the beauty world, it is all about taking care of what you have. And yeah, I'm interested to see how a year and a half of looking at ourselves on a computer screen is actually going to impact our self-esteem and stuff. Because we've spoken to a dentist on the show who said the same thing, like they are flat out with cosmetic dentistry because people saw, you know, things with their teeth that they just weren't happy with. So yeah, I think that's going to be really interesting to see the fallout.
I think so. And for me, skincare has always been self-care and self-esteem and self-worth. Fortunately or unfortunately, whatever way you want to word it, they're definitely entwined. An awful lot of our clients in Nerd Network would just feel so they're truly affected by their skin. It can affect whether they want to go out that day, whether they want to socialize, will they go on a date, you know, will they go to the school gate without makeup. So it's a huge piece. The hard part for me when it comes to more aesthetic side is that unfortunately still we're an unregulated sector, and if you look at the turnover that our industry has, it was 150 million in the cosmetic section alone last year. It's huge. So because it's not regulated, it's a tricky one, to be honest. So when you talk about where do you go? How do you start? How do you know where to look for? What qualifications do you look for? Because it's still an emerging sector, it's only of late that a lot of the accrediting bodies have brought in qualifications beyond that of beauty therapy.
Right.
So when people say to me online, Jennifer, where should I go? What should I look for?
Yeah.
It is honestly a tricky one. So there's a handful of us in Ireland that have qualified in that highest tier. So what I would encourage people to do is try and look for someone who has specific qualifications beyond that of beauty alone. So if you go with the QQI, which is the framework in Ireland, and if we look at beauty, typically it's 4, 5, 6 are the levels that you're looking at. So 4 is for those that maybe are beauty therapy, like beautician trained, so nails, lashes, tan, and basic facial. Whereas when you go into the level 5 sector, you're starting to use modalities such as iontophoresis, sonophoresis, basically technology on the face. And then level 6 is when you get specific qualifications in skincare alone that are the radio frequency, that are the IPL, that are the laser, that are the needling. And that's only new. There's genuinely very few people in Ireland that have the peels and the needling side. So that's what I'd start to encourage therapists alike to definitely get that qualification. Why it's hard is that because it's not regulated, the insurance companies will still state that you don't need the official qualification to treat a client.
Yeah.
And where I see there's slight concern since it's so new is that there's an awful lot of young therapists that want to get into skincare but have been giving a modality or appeal and say off you go after one day's training, which is enough to do the treatment, but I think the reality is that it's actually quite a complicated. It's an art and a science together.
Yeah.
So anyone can put a peel on, honestly. It's so simple. You apply the peel, but what you really need to know is the theoretical element behind what peel is it, what's it doing, what adverse reactions could you potentially incur, what results is a client going to get, how frequently should they come, are they a suited candidate for it? So there's an awful lot within it. So it's not as straightforward as I'd love to be able to answer. But for anyone who's curious, say they've redness, then IPL definitely is the modality to consider, because ultimately the light, it's called vascular treatments, you're treating the vascular area. So for example, if you put the light onto the actual redness that you might incur, be it broken veins around the nose, the chin, or just diffuse redness. Sometimes when you've sat out in the sun too much over a period of life, you'll have like a lot of redness across your chest. Then IPL is great for that, because ultimately what it's doing is the light is attracted to the chromophore, which is the redness, or the target is the redness, and it just disperses it. So they are quite simple treatments to perform, but they're definitely, they do need a little bit of consideration as to who you're going to and why you're going for it.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. It's your face at the end of the day, and you know, you want to be very careful with that and make sure that the person who's doing it fully understands the function of the skin and all the rest. So you're looking out for that level 6 qualification. That's a really good tip. So you IPL there, you said you explained how that works. That's great for redness. What else is it good for?
So IPL comes in three ways, really. So the redness is the first one, as we said. The second is what is called like an acneic treatment. So for anyone that has scarring or has active acne, there's amazing treatments for that. I usually would opt to do that alongside peels. So sorry, just to finish off the IPL. Yeah. So it's great for skin rejuvenation. So just general plumpness and hydration and dewiness and anti-aging. Then, as we said, the redness and then also the acne element. But if you are, I suppose, in the world of having had acne, then I would consider peels. So in the peel world, there's salicylic acid, mouthful and a half, but that is related to aspirin. It's phenomenal for anti-inflammatory, it's antibacterial, that takes down any of the papules or pustules, in English, the spots that you have. Then there's glycolic, which a lot of people will be aware of. So ultimately you'll notice there's a crossover between what you can do at home and what you can do in clinic. But what you can do in clinic is an awful lot more active.
Right.
And then lactic acid, retinol. So the common ingredients at home, but in a higher percentage and usually in a lower, what we call pH. In essence, it means it has a more action
stronger,
on the skin.
Yeah.
Exactly, stronger on the skin.
Okay, cool. So those would fall under the kind of chemical peel category. And like, you know, I think a lot of us saw Samantha on Sex and the City get a chemical peel and have like a completely red face for days.
But she has ruined our career.
Yeah, it's not like
single
that now, is it?
No. Like there are peels, definitely. There are peels. For example, I've had treatments done during COVID with a dermatologist, and there's some treatments that you do leave the clinic looking not quite like Samantha Jones, Sex and the City, but it depends on the severity and it depends on what you're getting done and why you're getting it done.
Yeah.
So you're kind of traditional, going in for a treatment at lunchtime, you can leave dewy and fresh. But then there are far more advanced ones that you should expect flaking. Then there's ones that you do look a little bit, I say a little bit, you can check out on our social media when I've had these done, but quite a lot of redness, quite a lot of swelling. But it depends on what purpose and as to why you're getting them done. But no, you're right. Samantha Jones is not what everybody will look like.
Okay. Can we talk about lasers then? What would you be getting a kind of laser treatment for?
So laser is an interesting one. So usually in the beauty world, laser is associated with hair removal. So that's usually where you have your Candelas, your NDAGs, which treats all skin colours, which is phenomenal. And then the other side of it is you can go to, as I just mentioned briefly, a dermatologist, and you can have treatments done such as Fraxel, which will help to resurface the skin. So I believe in both. I think the laser is a great way to remove hair. If you're pale skinned or if you're fair skinned and you've dark hair, it really does reduce the hair reduction. It's a great hair reduction modality.
Yeah.
But then there's treatments like Fraxel, which cause superficial and I suppose more medium trauma to the skin, with a view to your skin resurfacing and replenishing itself and triggering your own collagen and elastin. So that should always, in my opinion, be done underneath the doctor. It should be done either by a therapist working with the doctor side by side, or with a nurse alongside a doctor, but ultimately it's a more doctor-led treatment. So they're intense. The difference between IPL and laser is that IPL is a more scattered light, whereas laser is laser focused. Yeah. Exactly. So it's so specific to an area. So it's often what we call ablative, which means it's causing trauma to the skin with a view to the skin replenishing and regenerating itself.
Okay. I just want to remind people that if you have a question for Jen, you can send it in to us. 51552 is the number to text. You can also email us, louise@rte.ie. But tell me about microneedling, because I know that microneedling as a concept is something that a lot of people seem to be doing at home. But is that a good idea?
The answer is no. For me, it's an absolute no. So, okay, so there's two types of needling. So you hear of things like dermaroller, you hear of microneedling, you hear of cosmetic stimulation therapy. All of those words mean, as you just said, microneedling. So micro means smaller. Needling suggests that you do use a needle. Then there's another form entirely, which is what you do at home, called cosmetic needling. So the reality is the devices look the same. So for anyone who doesn't know what they look like, they kind of look like an old school lawnmower, where it's like a handle, and then you have this kind of rotatory piece at the end, and when you kind of push or roll it, the needles themselves go around like a cycle. So what you're doing at a clinic is that you're using a needle, depending on your insurance, you're using a needle usually 0.5 millimetre up to 1 millimetre depending on your qualification, and that ultimately is causing trauma to the skin. So the analogy I always use is like it's going to the when you go to the gym and you cause a little bit of trauma to your muscle repairs itself, becomes tighter, more toned, and then you keep going. And that's ultimately what you're trying to do to the face. So typically you're kind of rolling back and forth. There is a specific technique. You are looking for a slight amount of redness, what we call edema, which is swelling. And then the last piece is a little bit of pinprick bleeding. And by getting that bit of blood without trying to be gruesome, you know then from an anatomy and physiology perspective, you're stimulating what's called TGF beta-3. Not trying to get too nerdy, but that's the kind of science behind skincare. You want to ensure that you get the clinical endpoint that the skin desires. And that ultimately means it helps trigger your lines, your wrinkles, as in it'll help regenerate collagen and elastin. So that's why this treatment is brilliant for tightening the skin, toning the skin. It's amazing for really tightening and constricting pores. It's great for pigmentation. It's great for broken capillaries, because it's your skin ultimately working itself out. Whereas what people do at home, which is what you're asking me, should be that the needles are an awful lot less, so 0.01 millimetre. So it's literally just the top layer of the skin that you're trying to temporarily open to allow your home care products to get in further.
Okay.
The problem for me is that people are buying all sorts of needles from all sorts of places, and they're trying to do what you need training and years of experience to do well. Yeah. And they're causing sometimes a lot of trauma to their skin.
Okay. What about microdermabrasion?
So microdermabrasion, or MDA for short, is ultimately, usually it's kind of crystals. It can be different forms of material that you abrade over the skin. Personally, I've never been a huge fan of them as a singular option, simply because I feel that you're mechanically frictioning the skin, but you're not regenerating anything underneath. So with needling, when you cause that trauma, you're working on the living layer of the skin that you can't reach with home care products. Whereas with microneedling, with microdermabrasion, yes, you get that superficial, instantaneous placebo brightening effect,
yeah,
but it doesn't do anything below. So okay. I would encourage, if you want to go down the microdermabrasion road, firstly, don't have any active acne, don't have sensitive skin, etc. But I would always only ever do it alongside LED or IPL or with a peel, so that the modalities together complement each other. One is superficial, mm-hmm, and one is deeper.
Okay. There's lots of questions coming in, so we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to play you the new song from Lorde after this break, and then we're going to come back and get some answers to your questions. 51552 is the number to text, from Jen Rock, aka The Skin Nurse.
Louise McSherry on 2FM.
That is the new one from Lorde. She is back. The song is called Solar Power, produced by Jack Antonoff. No surprises there. They've worked together for the last few albums, and a new album is coming. Now, we are with Jennifer Rock. We are talking about, Jen, what's the name? What's the category called?
So aesthetic treatments or medi-cosmetics.
It's kind of like tweakments, lasers, tweakments, all that kind exactly. of stuff. And we've got a load of questions in for Jen, so let's just get stuck in. Liz says, I have pigmentation on my cheekbone after pregnancy and just wondering what is the best treatment.
Pigment is a tough one, I'm not going to lie. It's the hardest to treat, simply because as it is here, it's hormonal. So it's physically induced, it's internal, it's systemic as opposed to external. So the first thing I'd say is make sure you're applying your SPF. And I know that's the most monotonous answer, but it's the truth. So make sure you're applying your SPF and reapplying it regularly. And then the real way to treat it at home would be to use vitamin A. so be careful of vitamin A and the retinol strength coming into the summer because you are more susceptible to light. Then look out for things like vitamin C and vitamin E because they help slow down the overproduction of pigment you're having in your skin. So that's like a quick synopsis of three ways to do it at home. And then from a treatment perspective, I would go for a consultation to a clinic, particularly nurse or doctor led, to see what they could do. The reason why I say nurse or doctor led in terms of pigment is that pigmentation can actually be triggered further by light. So if you have an IPL treatment or a laser treatment, it needs to be treated extremely carefully so it doesn't actually induce more pigmentation into the skin.
So you really want to make sure you're going to someone who knows what they're doing. Okay, I'm going through a course of IPL, says this person, for thread veins on my face, and it's bloody painful. Is there anything I can do to help with the after effects? The broken down redness kind of looks like a bruise at times. I can cover it up with makeup, but do I just have to put up with it?
I do agree, it's bloody painful. So it's for anyone that hasn't had it done, it almost feels like someone's flicking your face with elastic. You know when you flick your skin? So it's not. But it's quick, it's short.
If you get it over your whole face.
It depends. So for example, if it's just broken capillaries on the chin, cheek, nose, you just get those areas. Sometimes people can get the full face or across the full chest or decollete area.
And how long would it take?
Honestly, I love doing it. I don't know if I'm sadistic or not, but it's all about client management and just calming a person into it. I think you should meditate before you go, to be fair. But it's 10 seconds per area. And it's usually a countdown. You can hear the machine go beep, and then all of a sudden the light has been exposed to the skin. So it's quick, it's short, it's snappy, and it works. But to answer this question, I think vitamin C internally is a really powerhouse when you're getting IPL done. Firstly, vitamin C will help with collagen and elastin. And also when you have redness, an awful lot of the time, the redness is actually caused by the fact that the collagen in the capillary, so in the little red vessel, isn't as strong as it once was. So you're working by replenishing the collagen in the vessel to make it stronger. In English, essentially, it's less likely to break down as quicker. So it'll help with the current bruising, and it will help prevent you having to get the IPL quite as soon.
Okay. Next up, I was on Roaccutane as a teenager for cystic acne, and when it was cleared and I came off the treatment, I was told to never use products on my face. It's been 10 years and I often get dry skin, but I'm worried about putting anything on it. Am I okay to start using products again? Is that a thing after Roaccutane? You're told not to put anything on your face?
I personally haven't heard that. Whilst you're on Roaccutane, for anyone that doesn't know, it's retinoic acid. It's a medical version of the vitamin A that we speak about topically. So they're all from the same family. When you're on Roaccutane, you do have to be extremely careful as to what product you're applying. You're probably more prone to dryness, sensitivity, irritation. So SPF is an absolute must, and a good hydrating moisturiser, something with ceramides, would be ideal just to really replenish the barrier. However, you're not really allowed to use acids or other forms of vitamin A, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
But for the 10 years afterwards for not using product, that is something I'm not sure of. So for fairness sake and for the correct answer, do go back to who you're seeing just to make sure you completely understood that right, because I personally haven't seen that alongside any other dermatologist before. And then for now, if once you're given the green light by your dermatologist, I would say cleanse in the morning, obviously SPF, and then maybe something like a nice hydrating or a ceramide-based moisturiser. So there's lots of different brands, lots of different price points. Start small, start simple, start to see the results. And then I would bring vitamin A, you know I'm going to say this, Louise, bring vitamin A into your life. The reason being that you've already taken vitamin A internally and you know it works. So if you can take another, granted, a lot less proactive and aggressive of a version, but it's the same premise, so your skin will respond quite well to it. That would be your maintenance program.
Okay.
So to recap, cleanse, vitamin A serum and SPF is what I'd love to get this person on.
Okay. Sarah says, hi Louise, this may not be Jennifer's bag, but I'm still struggling with the hand sanitizer dryness. I have to use it endlessly in work and I'm using moisturizers, but is there a secret tip to keep my skin hydrated against the alcohol gel?
This has been obviously such a brilliant question because it's been such a popular conversation for over a year now. I still can't find a hand cream that I feel really gives back to the skin unless I'm quite greasy for about 10 minutes afterwards. Now, Aven do nice ones and they're kind of hydrating and generic, and generic sounds disrespectful, but there's no scent to it and they just give back to the skin. So I'd see that as a positive. But my real answer is hydrating from the inside out. So nobody likes this. So you ask about hand sanitizer and then I'm going to reply with saying, you know, maybe consider your essential fatty acids. So your nuts, your seeds, your fish, your oils, they really do hydrate like nothing else, to be honest.
Yeah.
And if you are going to go for a hand cream, again, very few on the market, try and look for one that has SPF in it, because a lot of us in our 60s and 70s and beyond become quite aesthetically conscious of our hands and how thin they are. Mm. So why not start now with SPF to prevent that reality in a couple of days? decade's time.
Excellent. Avril in Dublin says, you are so right. I've been looking at myself on Zoom calls for 15 months and I'm starting to get self-conscious. For the total novice, how would you recommend dipping your toe into Botox, etc., without getting frozen face?
I think the frozen face is everybody's concern, to be honest. And I think if I can blame Samantha Jones, Sex and the City again, I think there was an awful lot to be said for like the early noughties and aesthetic medicine. And people assume that if you get filler, you'll look, you know, quite swollen or that your lips might distort themselves and so on. Thankfully, you know, as with everything in medicine, it's evolved massively. So the first thing I'd say is seek somebody who truly is immersed in that field. Mm. So go to somebody who perhaps doesn't just do it in addition to their full-time job on a Tuesday or a Thursday. So I personally choose to go to somebody who is, it's 7 days a week, it's their livelihood, because I see it as an art and science and medicine together. Yeah. I think they have to analyse your face and
I
decide.
I always say a doctor. Like, so if you're absolutely having someone inject what is essentially a poison into your face, go to a doctor. Please go to a doctor.
And go to somebody who sees it as an art. So it's not just pop it into the forehead and away you go. So, for example, if I may say, where I would definitely endorse would be the Mulroney's, because when they look at a face, they look at the neck, they look at the cheek. They don't just look at the area that the patient presents with. Mm. And so because it's their speciality, they really advise if it's Botox or perhaps it's filler or perhaps it's Profilo. There's a whole suite of what they can use. And because they're connoisseurs and they specialise in it, then I'm not saying necessarily go there, but find somebody of their calibre wherever you live.
Go to someone who will assess you and what the best option for you is. Yeah. And then in terms of frozen face, like, is that, what would you say to people who are worried about that?
Louise, I got Botox done for the first time in my 20s. Bearing in mind, I've always, I suppose, worked in this area. I've worked in medical fields. And so when you work in your 20s with people that are perhaps a decade older, you're intrigued. And I came home, my dad was still alive at the time, and he just asked what had happened to my face because I had gotten it done far before me needing it. And so I didn't look like myself. And I think that's the problem. If you go to somebody who's going to perhaps administer it when you don't need it or put too much in when that's not necessary, then you won't look like you. Yeah. You need to find somebody that makes you look fresh.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of stigma at the moment in terms of, do you get Botox, do you not? And people not wanting to discuss this, even in circles of friends. And I don't, like, I spoke about this on my IGTVs with actually the Mulroney's, and it's a hard one to discuss, to be honest. But I've always said that in skincare, you need to look at the muscle and you need to look at the skin texture. And so, for example, in the Skinner Network or Skingredients, I can help your oil, your colour, your hydration, your pigment, your pore size, but I can't affect the muscle underneath. So, for example, I'm 36. If I, for example, had Botox done that made my muscle look 30, but I didn't look after my skin, and my skin could arguably look of a 38, 39, 40 year old, that's when you start to see distortion. Right. That's when I think things don't look great. Okay. So I think it's a personal choice. I think it's a medical choice where you go and if you do go. But I think it's important to know that they work alongside skincare.
Yeah.
So someone who uses skincare like I do to a T, like honestly, my house is a skincare shop.
Yeah.
But there's only so much that skincare can penetrate. And so I made the decision to go down the medical road as well. But they don't, they're not
mutually exclusive.
Exactly.
Yeah, they have to work
together. They complement each other. Yeah. They absolutely do.
I got Botox for the first time a year ago as well. And I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I went to people I respected who were experts, and I think it's personally, like, I feel like I have an obligation to say that I've gotten it because I write about beauty. And I think as people, and particularly as women, although I think it is affecting men more and more.
Agreed.
The more honest we can be about this, then the better. Because if you look at someone and you think, oh, wow, they look amazing. Like, if I look at Jennifer, I say this all the time. If I look at Jennifer Lopez, I'm like, Jennifer Lopez looks incredible. She does not look her age.
But
her body is incredible.
Olive oil?
Oh, she's only using olive oil, guys. But if I look at her, you know, once upon a time, I would have been like, I should look like that. But now I look at her and I'm like, that is her full-time job. She spends, her entire life is dedicated. She doesn't eat X, Y, or Z. You know, she does this much working out. She gets all of these treatments. She does blah, 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 blah. I don't want my full-time job to be looking good. So I can kind of make peace with that. And if I look at someone and I say, wow, like, they don't have a line on their face, why don't I have a line on my face? But I know it's because they're getting Botox or whatever. Then, you know, we're all just going to be mentally in a better place because you can understand why you look different. So yeah, personally, I think it's really important that if you can bring yourself to be honest about it, you should, because sure, everyone, like, loads of people are at it now. Do you know what I mean?
But I think the pressure that people like that must feel I don't envy them. I remember I used to work for a skincare brand, and every year I trained this particular lady whose full-time job it was to work on the cruise ship with her employer, and his wife had treatments for 40 hours a week, which when you think about it initially, because my dream, like, I adore trying new products, trying new treatments, like, that's been my lifelong passion. So I love having that opinion. I don't think I could do 40 hours a week, like 50 weeks of the year.
No way.
So look, it's a lot of pressure on people, but I do agree with you. I think you have to be honest, and I think there's no, it's just own it and celebrate it. If you go for it, brilliant. If you don't, perfect. And do it alongside skincare, please. That's my only request, that people don't see, oh, well, I don't have to cleanse in serum and SPF now. Sure, look, that doesn't work. It does work. They do totally separate things that work together in unison.
Well, we could talk about this all day.
We could.
But we only have a short amount of time on the show. Thank you so much, Jennifer Rock, aka The Skin Nerd. Where can people find you, Jen?
So theskinnerd.com is where we are. Thank you so much for having me, as always.
Thank you. Always a straight talker and so clear on these matters. Louise McSharry on 2FM.